KBOHR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth with Lisa Loving.
I'm Lisa Loving with the Pacifica Radio Network. Reporters Without Borders is an international organization tracking violence against journalists around the world. This week, they spoke out against attacks on reporters in Los Angeles covering the immigration and customs enforcement raids against workers there. We're speaking with Clayton Wymers. He's the executive director of Reporters Without Borders USA, which is based in Washington, D.C. And thanks for being here, Clayton.
Thank you for having me.
What's going on in Los Angeles right now, and what's happening to reporters on the scene?
Well, I think folks have been able to follow along as protests on the ground have really taken root in Los Angeles and many other cities around the country in response to the Trump administration's immigration raids. But what has maybe gotten a little bit less attention amid all the chaos on the streets is how much violence has been unleashed against the journalists who are trying to tell us about what's happening on the ground. It's been pretty shocking. We haven't seen this level of violence against journalists in the United States since really the height of the Black Lives Matter protest movement back in June of 2020, when things really reached a peak there. It is not lost on me that we're right around the 5-year anniversary of that time. It does not seem like we've learned our lesson from that particular episode, and that in many ways, things look worse on the ground today than they did 5 years ago.
Can you talk about some of the incidents? Because I found some reporting. The Washington Post actually did a pretty darn good article a few days ago, but I don't think that information's really sinking in to most people. What specifically are we talking about?
Yeah, well, there's been some really shocking incidents, even captured on video, of the police deliberately targeting journalists while they're reporting on the news. I think a lot of people have seen the video, for instance, of an Australian TV news reporter who, while live on the air, is shot with what they call a less than lethal munition, an LLM, basically a rubber bullet or a pepper ball, something like that. But in the video, you can see as she's talking with her back to this police officer, the police officer turned towards her, aim his rifle, and fire directly at her. There are, in the past, been a lot of incidents like this where, you know, the police might claim journalists were caught in the crossfire when they were trying to contain violent protesters or rioters, what have you. This is a case, and it's not the only one, where we have direct video evidence showing, nope, the journalist was targeted in a way that is completely against both California state law and out of step with the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Another example, the one that really got my attention, is Sergio Olmos. He works for Cal Matters in California, and he was shot in the chest with one of these foam bullets. Now, just a follow-up, just for people who don't know what we're talking about, we're not talking about one of those potato gun games that kids play.
They're no joke. I mean, they call them less lethal because they're not lethal. If they hit you in the wrong place, they can definitely cause some serious damage. They have sent multiple journalists to the ER in the past couple of days while covering these protests. I was talking to one journalist who hasn't been able to go back out to cover the demonstration because she's concussed, and so her newsroom won't let her go out, rightfully so, because she has a health condition that prevents her from doing so safely. These things have a real impact. And on top of that, the deliberate gassing of journalists with tear gas can cause serious damage to the lungs and to the eyes. But the damage isn't just to the journalists themselves. They're the direct victim. But ultimately, we're all victims because these moves to drive away journalists rob us of eyes and ears on the ground, of sources of reliable information of what's happening. And when you take journalists out of the equation on matters of public interest, something is going to fill the void that you left behind. And increasingly, that void is being filled by generative AI or propaganda. We see this time and time again around the world. When you block journalists from being able to cover a story, it doesn't diminish the demand for information about that story. People will seek out that information one way or another, but now they're going to go to sources that are less trustworthy. And that's a huge problem for our democracy.
Just to follow up on that, one of the stories that that is not very reported either. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and in 2020, during the Black Lives Matter movement, we had 100 nights of protest, and many, many, many people just took their phones out into the street to become journalists, people that weren't journalists before. But one of the things that has happened is that there was so much violence by the police, there was so much tear gas. A lot of these people that I personally know have really deep PTSD about it, and it's been 5 years. So I just had to add that. But Clayton, you had referenced, why is this important? Can we stay on that a minute? There's a ripple effect, I think, in terms of the information people have access to. Talk about that a little bit more. Why is this important? Are there more reasons why?
Well, this is arguably the number one story in our country right now, is this public defiance of the government's policies towards undocumented migrants in this country. And to prevent the media from being able to document what's going on is a serious blow to our democracy. You just can't have a participatory democracy if you don't have access to reliable information about what's going on in your community, in your city, in your state, in your country, in the world. This is not just a problem in the United States. You know, the probably the most extreme example of this right now is in Gaza, where Israel has imposed a media blockade going back to October 2023. A lot of people don't realize they haven't let a single international journalist who wasn't part of a highly choreographed
embedded
hatchman to enter Gaza since the conflict began. There's not really a good precedent for a situation like that. Layer on top of that the fact that at least 200 journalists have been murdered in Gaza going back to October 2023, plus the targeting of Palestinian telecoms infrastructure and the cutting Wi-Fi, cutting power. It all adds up to what's essentially a media blockade that creates a black hole of reliable information. And in that black hole is where propaganda and misinformation thrive and spread like wildfire. Because like I said before, people are going to seek out information. We have to give them the good sources of information. Now, I don't want to compare what's going on in Los Angeles to what's going on in Gaza. It is not, to be clear, it is not on the same scale. But I bring up that parallel to remind everyone these problems confronting press freedom exist everywhere. It's not just a problem over there. I think we've gotten too used in this country of thinking of press freedom as a foreign policy question, as something that we need to protect elsewhere in the world. But we need to protect it here. And if we take it for granted, that's when we're going to lose it.
Right. And like you just said, traditionally, it was considered that press freedom is something that you could take for granted in the United States. But I think about 5 or 6 years ago, the United States started to rank higher in some of these lists of places where it's dangerous to be a journalist. Can you just talk about that a little? Because I think that all over the world, this kind of violence has been on the rise.
Sure. So if we're known for anything at Reporters Without Borders, it's our index on world press freedom. We rank 180 countries and territories according to press freedom. And the United States has been sliding back on those rankings for the past decade. When we started doing this in 2002, the United States was 17th in the world. We just released the 2025 index last month, and we're now 57th in the world. Think about that. You know, there are 56 countries in the world that are considered to have better press freedom than the United States. This is a country that prides itself on the First Amendment, that thinks of itself as being a leader in democratic values. you can't really claim that for press freedom, because we've really fallen behind a lot of other developed democracies when it comes to freedom of the press. You know, a lot of people are shocked by that number, but then when you dig into the data and you look at the reasons for why we've fallen behind, it becomes pretty clear what's going on. We measure on five different indicators, and we've seen a decline in American press freedom on all five indicators. The leading indicator driving that decline is actually the economic score. That's not that surprising for anyone who's been paying attention in recent years, because we've seen thousands of jobs disappear from the news media system. We've seen newspapers all around the country closing. We've seen revenue declining. And now there's the added threat of the Trump administration coming after public media funding, which would force who knows how many local radio and television affiliates to shut down in the absence of that federal funding. So the media is really under a lot of economic pressure. And increasingly, we're seeing around the world, economic pressure is becoming the preferred tool of authoritarians who want to control the media. So it's, you know, we're not just talking about authoritarian regimes kidnapping, arresting, or killing journalists. We're talking about a much more insidious, maybe harder to pinpoint problem of turning the screws on the media, whether it's restricting who can invest in media outlets or forcing the sale of critical media outlets that don't agree with the ruling party. It's a trend that's developing across the globe that's really concerning.
The five key indicators used by RSF to assess press freedom in their World Press Freedom Index are political context, legal framework, economic context, socio-cultural context, and safety. I've checked that list. I always check that list. I'm a journalism educator too. And I educate, I actually have a training that I'm doing for radio affiliates called Riot Reporting. And it's something that impacts people, even people in the industry are kind of surprised and they're not ready for it. In Portland in 2020, the reporters wound up wearing bulletproof vests, helmets, goggles, gas masks, and all kinds of things. And the other thing that I have to say about that is what I've been thinking about, seeing all the chemical weapons being used in Los Angeles, is that the Portland experience showed that those chemicals pumped into the environment like that affect everyone. Everyone on the scene, they go into the watershed. And one of the most shocking impacts is that they impacted women's periods. So this whole thing is shocking. And it comes at a time when we don't even have enough reporters on the ground anymore because, you know, see the five factors of reporting. Now, here with Los Angeles, we're talking about violence by law enforcement, not by, for example, thugs in the street. But are there also thugs assaulting reporters? Is that an issue here too?
Yeah, actually, we're seeing both, which is very concerning. So as of the time that I'm talking to you right now, we've counted 35 separate attacks against journalists in the past few days during the protests just in Los Angeles. Of those 35, 30 were committed by law enforcement. And the other five were committed by other individuals. I'm not going to assume if that they're protesters or, you know, outside instigators or there's really no way to know because they don't wear a uniform. But we're talking about, you know, journalists who are being threatened and forced to leave a street corner that they're reporting from, or news vans that are being broken into and defaced. One interesting development that I've seen repeat itself is that the local Fox affiliate in LA has had several of its news vans defaced and its reporters harassed, on the assumption that people are assuming they see the Fox logo, they're associating it with Fox News, not realizing that the local Fox television affiliate is not really a part of Fox News. And so they're coming under attack for that. We've also seen that the NBC Telemundo local affiliate van was defaced, which is pretty surprising to see for a news organization that's so vital to covering the immigrant community in Southern California. I think it really speaks to the level of unrest that's going on and the unsafe environment for journalists. It's important to remember that this is inherently dangerous work when you're covering protests like this. But what's making it more dangerous is that there's not just an unwillingness, but a complete lack, of any sort of policy from law enforcement to enforce the First Amendment, to protect the rights of journalists to be there. And we shouldn't need to remind the authorities that journalists have a right to cover on protests, but apparently we do. And so I would love to be in a situation where we're just asking the authorities to protect journalists from, you know, violent demonstrators who are on the street who are threatening them. But we need journalists to be protected from law enforcement itself.
And if I'm not mistaken, in order to get a press pass in Los Angeles County, those are issued by law enforcement. In many municipalities, the press passes are issued through the sheriff's department. But there is no policy to protect the First Amendment rights of journalists. It really calls that out in a big way.
Well, I should be clear. California Penal Code is very explicit that journalists have the right to cover these protests unimpeded by law enforcement. So it's not that we don't have the policies on the books. It's that the various agencies who are out there policing aren't following them and don't have internal guidance that enables them to respect the law. The other problem that we're seeing here is there's just an alphabet soup of different agencies that are on the ground policing these protests. It's not clear to me if they're coordinating, and they all have different rules of engagement with the journalists. And in fact, that California Penal Code doesn't actually apply to the feds at all. So when we're talking about ICE and DHS and Department of Justice forces and the Marines and the National Guard and all the other federal forces that are out on the streets of Los Angeles right now, that California law doesn't apply to them. But the First Amendment still does.
Clayton, we've talked a bit about how common this is, not just here, but around the world. It's a trend that unfortunately is growing. We've talked about some of the ways that this impacts society, not just the journalists, but the communities where they live. I have a sneaking suspicion that the law enforcement people who are required to carry this out are also impacted by it, probably in a negative way. Is there anything that we, the people, can do about it? Is there a place for public engagement or pressure here?
I think there is. Reporters Without Borders, along with a coalition of other press freedom groups, have sent a few letters to DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, to the leadership of LAPD and LASD, and we're talking to the Attorney General of California as well, making our recommendations on how to improve the situation. To everyone listening, I would say, stay informed about these protests, but really be mindful of where you're getting your information, because we're seeing an awful lot of misinformation that's being spread on social media. And you frankly need to become experts in media literacy, which is, I know, a lot to ask of every citizen, but we're at a point where that's necessary. You need to be extra diligent about what the sources of information that you're reading or consuming are, because there are a lot of bad actors there who are trying to take advantage of algorithms that are designed to feed you misinformation, to feed you sensational content that may or may not be true. So sometimes, you need to take that extra step and double check that source and make sure. And, the good thing about following legitimate journalists and legitimate news outlets is they have internal processes in place that you can trust. They follow certain ethical rules that just don't hold any sway with social media content creators.
And just to follow up on that quickly, I've been doing this for a few minutes myself, and I cannot even wrap my brain around how much misinformation is coming from not two different sides, but like maybe 10 different sides in this particular situation. Mm-hmm. And you have people left, right, center. There's probably even actors in other countries, as we saw with the Cambridge Analytica scandal when Donald Trump was elected for the first time, and how social media, in that case specifically Facebook, really made it possible for, like the Russian government and other people too, to use social media to divide people. And it's tough. Like, we're not college professors And that goes, though, that goes to the point of why media consumers could and probably should be more sophisticated, at least about the sources that they're reading, listening to, watching.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the polarization aspect of it, because we do have an unfortunately polarized media ecosystem, and there is a tendency to to enter your own echo chamber and listen to the voices in media that reflect what you already believe. But what gives me a lot of hope is that when you ask people, and there's a lot of polling data on this and there's a lot of research on it, when you actually ask people, Americans are fairly unanimous in valuing press freedom, in wanting a plurality of voices available to them, in opposing government censorship and government control over the media, the kind of control that we see the Trump administration trying to undertake. That gives me a lot of hope. The other thing to note during these protests in LA is that the media who have been targeted by law enforcement really span the entire ideological spectrum. We're seeing both right-wing, left-wing, centrist media, all of them being swept up in this. We're seeing legacy media, local media, newspapers, international and foreign correspondents. There's been no distinction. And so this is something that concerns every American. I think, I can safely say Americans like the First Amendment. They like the idea of press freedom. And everyone has a vested interest in making sure that the press are able to tell the story of what's happening in the world. And that's what I want to remind everybody of here is that this is not a partisan issue. Press freedom is not for Democrats. It's not for Republicans. It's not for any one side. It's for every American.
I want to shift gears just briefly and say, did I see it right that Reporters Without Borders, you're having your 40th anniversary?
If we can shift to something happy.
Yeah, congratulations. Tell our listeners all of the things that you do, all the things you do, and why you do them.
So we are an international NGO. We have offices in 13 countries. The office that I oversee is here in Washington, D.C. Our global headquarters is in Paris, France. We were founded in France. And that was 40 years ago this year. No one can quite agree on a date, so we're just kind of saying this fall is when we're going to do the celebration. It's one of those funny things that's been lost to history. But we do a lot of things. We monitor and track press freedom threats around the country. So I mentioned that we're well known for our rankings of every country according to press freedom. We also keep statistics going on our website of every journalist who's been killed, jailed, taken hostage, or disappeared every year. And you can go to rsf.org and see the up-to-date statistics there. We do a lot of advocacy. We don't think of ourselves as just a watchdog that is calling balls and strikes. We actually want to be part of the solutions. So a lot of the proactive stuff we're doing around the world, for instance, we open press freedom centers in conflict zones that give out protective gear to journalists and do training and do psychological and trauma support. We have those in Ukraine and Lebanon and the Democratic Republic of Congo. We have a satellite up over Russia and occupied Ukraine right now that's broadcasting trustworthy Russian language journalism back into Russia, a country where independent journalism had been made effectively illegal. We occasionally smuggle journalists out of countries like Russia or out of countries like Afghanistan where their lives are under threat. So we're doing all sorts of things around the world. You can go to rsf.org and read all about it. We publish quite a lot on there because we're at 180 countries around the world and we try to have a presence in all of them.
Okay, last question. Clayton, what's the most important thing for people to know about law enforcement violence against journalists or anybody's violence against journalists?
At RSF, we don't defend the lives of journalists because journalists are some special class of citizen or better than the rest of us. It's because of the value they represent for the rest of us, because when you silence a journalist, you're silencing a witness to history. And like I said earlier, the victim is not just the journalists themselves who have been injured or arrested or killed. The ultimate victim is the rest of us because we have a more impoverished view of our world. We need journalism in order for democracy to survive.
Before we sign off this interview, I also want to say anyone who's listening right now who is interested in being a journalist, who knows a journalist, who loves a journalist, the Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, FPJ.org has more information for what journalists can do to protect themselves. It's not the same organization. You guys have different lanes, I think, and yet you're linked. And it breaks my heart to hear some of these stories. So thanks, Clayton. Wanted to thank you again for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I wish we had a happier topic to discuss.
Someday we will. That was Clayton Weimers. He's the executive director of Reporters Without Borders USA. For Pacifica Radio, I'm Lisa Loving.
let the air out of your shoes and prepare yourselves for a period of simulated exhilaration.
You're listening to Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
There's something curious about this broadcast.